Hi, and welcome to Hallmark for Murder. I'm Kat.
I'm Sarah.
And today we are rounding out our series on Fixer Upper Mysteries.
Very exciting.
The final Fixer Upper Mystery is called Deadly Deed, which I did not think about until like the last 4 minutes.
Oh, yes, yeah, same, actually. Because I read it as Deadly Dead multiple times and was like, that's weird, but you know, Hallmark still has her listed as Shannon Hammer in the very first one. So I figured it was some kind of typo and I was not to know the name.
I saw it the entire time because on the Hallmark, I watch, if I watch the Hallmark Now, I guess it's not the app because I watch it on a browser is how I do it. And even if you're in full screen, like the full like menu is on the screen the entire time. So I can see the title.
Even if you move your mouse around?
I've tried every...
Oh my gosh.
It's very distracting. I saw the title the entire movie.
Okay.
I didn't quite get it till the very end there. This is directed by Mark Jean, or Jean.
Oh, our guy.
Who's the same from last time.
Yeah.
Written by Tina Booth. The author... co-wrote with the last one, but this is
Kate,
just Tina.
Kate Carlisle? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She maybe had other engagements and just left it to Tina this time.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I really liked this one. So
yeah,
I thought it was delightful. Maybe not as much zing as the last one, but...
It had enough pep, but just not enough zing. I agree. Mm-hmm. But I do think that Tina... has a knack where a lot of Hallmark writers do not. She has a knack in like that she does not leave massive gaping plot holes. If she leaves a plot hole, it's like a little teeny, like whoops. But yeah, so I really like Tina Booth. This one was good. I very, very much enjoyed it.
This was from 2018. Which actually seems like it wasn't that long ago because we have the, you know, basically we lost 3 to 4 years. So 2018 was like just happened.
Yeah.
I actually didn't do any research on why they ended. Or like, I don't understand how Hallmark makes decisions about which mystery series to continue and which to just abruptly end. Like the Aurora Tea Gardens, they're literally like 20 something movies, Garage Sale Mysteries, there's like 18.
But don't both of those lead actresses have significant controversial like lives?
Those happen too, yes. So I don't know
so
why.
So maybe that's it. They can milk the,
oh, okay.
the fame All of right. it. But Jewel just has too much integrity.
Okay, yeah.
I doubt that, but.
Yeah, I don't know. As we saw with Mystery 101, like we don't, there seems to be no rhyme or reason around like what keeps going or not, or I don't know. It's out of people's hands. Maybe it's not. Maybe it depends on the ensemble.
Maybe. I really can't help feeling like Mystery 101 was a, oh my gosh, I just blanked on her name.
Jill Wagner?
Jill, I was trying to call her Kate Wagner. Jill Wagner. I feel like that was a Jill Wagner exodus.
I think so, too. I think that was the issue.
Yeah.
By the way, did you feel like Patrice in this movie was like kind of like the poor gal's Jill Wagner?
Yeah. She had the same lips and like little nose bridge. But I recently watched a movie with like old Jill Wagner, like early Jill Wagner.
Autumn Dreams. So good.
Wow. She really looks like wildly different with. Out filler and oh. like big eyebrows.
Oh, okay.
So different.
You're so good at that. I don't even know.
Yeah. It's mostly her lips and her eyebrows. I think that the rest of her face is still pretty like regular. But yeah.
Okay. I would love to do a breakdown with you and have you like do a comparison.
Yeah, definitely.
And tell me what
has
happened there.
Like in the office of Hillary Swank face. Oh, we're old. Okay.
We need to get one of those. You know, the fancy murder boards in these movies are like clear. They're like whiteboards, but they're clear.
Yeah.
We need to get one of those. And then we can get dry erase markers and like do arrows like from like 2016 Joe Wagner to 2020 Joe Wagner.
Yeah. I love that.
Okay. In this movie, Shannon Hughes is renovating a Victorian mansion, and when a banker is found murdered inside the house, well, he was found outside the house, technically, right?
Yeah.
She has to solve the mystery before the renovation becomes a demolition. Is this the best IMDb recap that we've had so far?
It's the least accurate one and kind of the most dramatic.
I love that. Okay. So we start this with two youths ready to break into an abandoned house owned by a rich old lady who died last year, which, of course, again, this happens every time. I completely forgot about this cold open. So who did they run into? Do we know?
This is a loose end.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the loose ends. I don't know. I was actually very scared the whole time.
Do you think it was when Mr. Potter came to do the water damage? Is that who they ran into?
But I think he came to do the water damage like that night. The night that he died.
Oh, okay.
Because Jewel says that Shannon says that she inspected this room before they started.
Okay.
But it isn't clear like what night those kids are there on.
Yeah.
And they never show back up. Although I did think one of them was the young boy, but it's not.
They did show up.
Oh yeah, they were right.
They were sort of lurking in the front yard and looking really guilty.
And then they ran away or biked away. Real fast. I don't know who they ran into. It could have been Mr. Potter. It could have been... I mean, I really don't know. That's just a big, loose mystery.
Okay, the music is actually extremely creepy, just in time for spooky season. And I was actually nervous. Genuinely scared.
Yes, it was very scary.
Props to Michael Plowman, who did the music for this, because he did a top-notch job. Like, I was genuinely scared in this scene.
And kind of like the kids were pretty decent actors, and they made me feel that they were very scared. And then, like, the framing of the shots and, like, the surprise little jump scare. I really thought they were going to get, like, murdered, just like our last girl.
Yes!
Yeah.
Well, when they first walked up to the house that they were going to break into, they see a ladder and the camera like kind of goes in on the ladder and the ringleader says, "Sweet." And so for at least like 6 seconds, I thought they were excited to steal the ladder. And I had was trying to think do they have a side hustle like cleaning gutters or something? Like they were very excited about this ladder. Instead, no, they are using the ladder to break into the upper floor and end up realizing that someone else is also in the house. And this was a legitimately scary scene.
Yes, but I mean, I know we're going to let it go, but like, who was it?
Who was that?
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Moving on.
We cut to cheery Lighthouse Cove, where Mac is still living in Shannon's playhouse, having delayed renovations on his house once again.
Why did he do that again?
Oh, because of the charity thing? Because she volunteered to do this pro bono charity renovation for 3 months.
Yep.
And was like, "Hey, big time client who is living in my house because I haven't finished his renovation yet. How about we just put this on pause for another 3 months."
Yeah, I mean, and he's probably making mortgage payments.
Oh, my God.
The whole time. But, well, you know what? This was like a question for a last movie, really. But why does Mac need that house?
The big honking house?
He's like a bachelor. Like an elder bachelor. Just like, why is he?
I'm so excited to go home and tell John. that he's an elder bachelor.
Yeah. I mean, what do you need a mansion for, anyone, including John?
I mean, people who like old stuff. Like, I would get, a dream of mine would be to get a big, creepy old house.
But would you want to live there, or would you just want access to, like, the things that are there?
I would totally want to live there and, like, look out on the ocean and pretend I was, like, waiting for my sea captain husband to come back. But I would write letters with 800 candles around.
Then he comes home from ultimate frisbee practice.
Disc golf.
Disc golf.
Yes, exactly. Mac's niece is coming into town. And awkwardly staying with Shannon. So this is another, like, reason that maybe his house should be prioritized and be done so that he can, like, host his niece who's coming into town.
For 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. She's 14. She's going to visit her uncle for 2 weeks.
Shannon is wearing a very cute outfit in this scene. I took several mental notes to copy the outfit, but we'll probably never actually make it happen. Mainly because I don't understand belts. But it was really cute. It was like a little dress. I wouldn't do the leather jacket. I would do probably a jean jacket or a cardi.
Jean jacket. But, and then the tights and boots.
Tights and boots. Yeah.
I felt like it was a really major departure. There were two dresses in this movie. Mm-hmm. Both were like extreme departures from her previous dress choices, including the sexy black number.
Oh, yeah.
But this, of the two dress choices in this movie, this one was by far, I mean, just blew the other one out of the water. But she, like, there's something sort of like wrong with her, did you notice, is there something sort of like off-putting?
It looked, very tightened.
Yeah.
Like somebody had just like gone like,
yeah,
the back of her face.
Yeah. It was weird. Maybe she just lost a lot of weight.
Something happened. Like, maybe she had, like, a
buccal fat removal.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyways, the dress was great.
Yeah, it was great.
But belts, also not my forte.
I recently watched or rewatched whatever movie uses Shannon's truck, and already have forgotten what movie it was, but the killer, it was the killer's truck in that, I believe. So now I, like, every time I see that truck, I'm like, oh.
Ah, murder.
So that's a invasion of the Hallmark Body Snatchers car version.
Car body.
Shannon is working on a house donated by the bank for charity. And it's the rich old lady's house from before. And the youths are on bikes wearing helmets and scurry away when they're seen.
Their only crime is breaking and entering. It's not that they're not safe on their bikes.
I mean, I thought it was interesting. I mean, I have a real issue with bike helmets. That's inexplicable, and John gets on to me about it all the time.
But because you love them?
I think they look really nerdy, and I don't like to wear them, which makes zero sense.
What if you wore
because
one of
I
those?
Wore so many other very nerdy things. I have no qualms about wearing a real ridiculous hat.
You've
for
worn
sun reasons.
Space printed leggings all over the place.
I mean, I actively wear ridiculous things all the time, but for some reason a bike helmet, like, I'm like, this looks dorky. Like, it's a very weird.
I kind of think you'd look great in one of those little, like, French moped bike helmets, you know?
I've tried to make it fun. I got one that was kind of cute with birds on it. I probably should get one of those ones with cat ears on it, and then I'll be more likely to wear it.
Yeah, but one that's, like, just really close to your head and doesn't have the, like,
oh, God,
crystal skull
that.
Function.
Oh, Lord.
I don't know. We'll workshop it later.
Anyways, those kids were real safe. And for any kids watching, those movies were great role models. You should wear your helmet.
Anytime you're breaking an entry.
Yeah. We never see those kids again or know anything about why they...
Nope.
Yeah. The bank donated the house to be turned into apartments for low-income renters. And Shannon is doing the reno work in her cute outfit. Just kidding. I mean, she's literally still wearing the dress and the tights. Yeah. And yeah. Sean is actually, of course, doing most of the work. And he seems to have bounced right back from reading his deceased sister's high school journals.
Yeah. I mean, we can't know how long ago that was.
No.
But he's very chipper and doesn't mention her at all.
Mm-mm. He is awkwardly flirting with Jen. And they act like they haven't seen each other in 15 years, but that can't possibly be true given the previous movies setup.
No, and he even said, it's been a while, Jennifer, or whatever. And she's like, it has. But like, no, you guys just saw each other.
Literally.
Like, you were investigating his sister's murder along with Jewel, your best friend, mm-hmm. who works with him.
And you all went to high school together.
And everyone went to high school together, and it's not been that long.
But they're acting like, who is, oh.
Do you live here? You're here? You're working here today?
And Jen openly ogles his tush.
Yes, she does. But after he asks her, oh, no, this isn't then. She does openly ogle his tush as he walks away.
Mm-hmm. Shannon has organized this event, but seems to have no plans other than just showing up in her cute outfit. Her dad, Jen, and Sean have to take over coordinating all these volunteers that
Everything,
have shown up.
The whole thing.
There is a shocking number of dress blazers at this construction event as well.
Yeah.
So many people are wearing, like, showed up to volunteer at a construction site in, like, a real crisp blazer.
Yeah. I mean, they all look really good.
Yes.
Okay.
We learn that the president of the bank, Mr. Hopper, is annoyed that the bank board voted to donate the house and set a 3-month deadline on the renovation. This makes no sense, but we'll move on because it's Hallmark. And it's a major plot point later for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Shannon finds out from Callie, Mac's niece, that he was engaged before but called off the wedding. And I also was thinking that Shannon looks very natural and dewy.
Yeah.
But then when they switch from Callie to Shannon, there's like a different filter for Jewel than for Callie.
It's weird. She has like this like almost fuzzed out face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the old Vaseline.
Or maybe they're using, like some different lighting. I don't know.
Yeah. Something's going on.
Yeah.
Shannon and Mac return to the house for some bogus reason and discover Mr. Potter murdered. Shannon offers some observations straight out of Murder, She Wrote, which the police chief just handles okay this time. Like, I feel like in previous movies, he was, like, openly deriding her. But this time, he's like, all right, Jessica Fletcher, like, all right, these are some... We'll take this under consideration.
Yeah, let's get some pictures. And then she's like, actually, I already took pictures, you idiots.
Mac and Shannon come back to Shannon's house to check on Callie. Mac goes upstairs to make sure Callie's been able to go to sleep, and simultaneously, Shannon decides to break out her guitar and start shredding. This clearly wakes Callie up, because she's like, I mean, just like, these are counteracts. Like,
right.
You go make sure that she's sound asleep. I will start playing
guitar.
My guitar.
As she peacefully dreams.
So this wakes Callie up, who then hears Mac talking about the murder. And then they have a cocoa break. to soften the blow.
Yeah.
Like, let's process this murder that just took place.
Yeah. Just as a quick aside, the term cocoa break is one I have extensively used to mean a number two in the bathroom. I need to take a cocoa break. So I really like that you pulled that in here. And you're welcome, listeners.
Yeah, I mean.
It's a great one.
That's a tool.
Yeah.
Put it in your toolbox.
Yeah, stick it in your pocket.
Shannon wants to collect trash talk about Mr. Potter to help them catch the murderer. But her dad overhears this and tells her H no, Shannon,
every other time there's been a murder, I tell you, don't dig into this, and you lie right to my face, and I guess I still love you because blood bonds or whatever, but do not. This time, I mean it.
I had an unexpected LOL when he asks her what happens when she starts asking questions of someone who turns out to be the killer. And she responds, after a beat, we find the killer.
Duh.
And I actually, like, laughed out loud, which is kind of rare for a Hallmark, but
yeah.
That was pretty good.
That, yeah.
Sean asked Jen out on a date, and I still don't understand why we're being asked to believe that Shannon's best friend and her foreman, who is also like a member of her family, are strangers who are like...
who've never even considered dating before, despite both being single, very attractive.
I mean, Jen's hair, my God.
It's so good. WTF. And then... I think it's Jewel. Shannon has the audacity to say to Jen, I think that you just got asked on a date. Like, what else would that have been? I don't.
It was very clearly.
He was like, do you want to get dinner and a movie with me? And nobody says that to their pal that they're like ogling and saying, I haven't seen you. And like, it's a date. Of course it's a date. Why are we surprised? You're all like 45.
Also, didn't Shannon and presumably Sean do the reno work on Jen's B&B? Remember, like, the very of the first episode?
Yes. Yeah, she did all the reno because she was in a dress screwing something into, like, a light fixture right before.
And Jen walked in and said, oh, shh. And I thought she was going to say something else, but she said, oh, Shannon. And she did that again in this movie, and I thought the exact same thing.
Oh, like, I missed it.
We meet Tommy's sister, who runs a local bookstore. She sets up a book signing with Mac, who seems to be very flirty with her.
And Jen touches that too? Her back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just so charming and affable that it seems like he wants to hook up with everyone. This made me question the whole connection with Shannon and why I felt like he was carrying all of that. It's like, because he's just like that with everyone.
Yeah. But, I mean, he does continue to carry it. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Shannon sees the truck that she and Mac witnessed leaving the crime scene, and it belongs to Jim Hopkins, who is one of the recipients of the low-income apartments. He had gotten into an intense fight with Mr. Potter the first day of construction and is one of many people pretty stoked to see him dead. Shannon casually breaks a promise to her dad not to ask questions of potential murderers. And Jim moonwalks away quickly and peels out. Like, he is immediately out.
Yeah, he's done.
Shannon tries to enlist Jen and Mac to sleuth for her so she's not breaking a promise to her dad, which she's already done. I guess she didn't remember how well Jen did last time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Why would you enlist her again? She's going to immediately blow her cover.
Which she... it does a terrible job, but the people don't seem to notice. She's, like, hiding behind, like, a plant, like, outside the bank building. And
that's
when
right.
She oversees,
that's right.
Or oversees, is that a thing?
Yeah, oversees.
She oversees and overhears the bank vice president and the director of the nonprofit of the charity.
Sunny Sights.
Arguing.
Yes.
And she's real obvious about it. It's amazing that they somehow did not see her.
It's not a thick plant. It's very, like, fragile and viney.
Shannon heads back to the bank to see why the house was appraised so low and sees Mr. Potter's secretary, Patrice, packing books. And, of course, as a longtime volunteer at the library...
I was so waiting to talk to you about this moment. It was very
clearly she does not know how to pack boxes of books because there's absolutely no way anyone could lift a box of that size packed with books.
And why were they just like flung in? Like, books are square. They have square angles. Mm-hmm. Like, what? They were just like literally piled in there.
Yes, it was painful.
And that box was old. It was not a brand new box. It was immediately going to break.
Shannon recommends a security guard helps them, which, why is that the solution? Like, let's get a man in here.
I kind of think it was a little, like, both, like, weird misogyny from Shannon, like, internalized misogyny, and then also, like, kind of classist. Like, let's get a security guard to help us, not let's get one of the other employees that might be stronger.
The security guard.
Like, get a security guard. They're not doing anything. They don't have real jobs.
They're used to manual labor.
Yeah, that's kind of how it felt to me.
Yeah, it was real weird. I think it was also just a way to get Patrice out of the way so that Shannon could snoop.
Yeah.
which she does, and ends up running into Mr. Drummond, the VP who is now taking Mr. Potter's job and moving into his office, like, right away.
Oh, yeah, he's got a plant and another box of books.
He acts real shady and stammers that, yeah, sure, he'll totally look into the low appraisal.
Yeah, he takes it from her. Yeah, so there's like the appraisal's like way too low. Yeah. And he's like, I'll figure it out for you, Shannon. Don't worry. And he steals it. But also, like, quick question, is the way that you know how it's always like you have too many books at your house no matter what? Is the solution that you just bring them to your office as the president of the bank? Because, like, is he going to read them there, like, while he's doing his job? Are they books that he wants to read? And then if not, then why are they all donated to the bookstore and immediately, like, placed first? Like, what is he – does he have, like, Gulliver's Travels up there? Like, is it for show?
Yeah, I did briefly wonder about that, too. Like, are these, like – some office – we have people come to the library who want to, like – I'm a lawyer. I'm setting up my law practice. Can you give me some law-looking books to have in the background? They're actually not going to read them, but it's just for decoration. But, like, does this guy have, like, banking books? In which case, the bookstore is not going to want them.
No.
You can't sell those?
No.
So, yeah, they must have been, like, regular books.
I don't know.
It's very weird that I just watched the Gulliver's Travel themed episode of Midsummer Murders today. Like,
oh, wow.
I listened to the podcast recap this morning. So that's very weird that you mentioned that book specifically.
It's October.
I do take some books that I don't know because I have too many books in my house. I do take some of them to the office.
Okay.
If they're sort of related to, I have many copies of Brené Brown books.
Mm-hmm.
Up there for, like, office reading. So, like, I'm doing that with my practicum student. We're going to read Dare to Lead.
Oh, awesome.
And I just took one on Black history in our state for my practicum student to read. And then we can just have that as a reference. I don't know. Apparently, yes, I do this.
Okay. No, I mean, it was a genuine question.
Also, my house is too small and I have too many books. Callie makes friends with Elliot, who is the son of Jim Hopkins, so she and Mac make him go down to the police station to give his dad an alibi. And we get to see that sweet recruitment poster again in Tommy's office.
I missed it again.
Oh, boy. Oh, you know what was missing, though, is that they took down the night trawler.
Oh.
Like the boat that's like the shipwreck.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
They had that big poster of a shipwreck, and they took that down.
Did you notice, by the way, all of the nautical-themed decor at the bank?
Yeah, I was very confused by that.
It was, like, really overwhelmingly nautical.
Yeah.
It's like life preservers everywhere.
There's a real theme there. And then at that credit union they go to later, I had to stop and pause. They had some very interesting marketing material at the credit union as well. Way to go. Is that production assistance or is that set dressing?
Set.
Okay. Nice job, guys. Shannon brings Tommy down to the bank to snoop, and in the process, they see a missing wrench, the suspected murder weapon, all bloody in the dingiest rag, chilling very plainly in the back seat of Mr. Drummond's Elantra or whatever. Like, it's just like laying on the seat. Like, it's not like.
Yeah.
In the, like, back, like, kind of shoved. Like, it's just, like, lightly placed.
It's, like, very gingerly located. And it made me want to start checking my back seat more frequently. I normally check it for, like, a person. But I need to start checking it for murder weapons.
Someone could 1,000% plant a murder weapon in my car. Because it is an absolute mess. At all times. For different reasons.
Well, then maybe no one could find it if they did plant it.
In fact, I have been carrying around. So last episode, my parents moved out of into assisted living. And so I had to take some stuff by myself. And I mentioned the trunk that I had to put in there in the old mansion. Oh, God. I don't want to think about it. That trunk is still in my car. I have been cruising around town, going up to the city, like commuting with an antique trunk in my car. And somebody asked me the other day if there was a body in there. So, yes, I absolutely.
That's your Hallmark IRL.
Yes, actually, maybe it is. I also like to think about the prop master, how he got that rag to, like, get that dingy. Like, yeah. I feel like that was a legit rag from his house or her house.
Like, under the kitchen sink, you were like, this will do.
Because this is, like, I mean,
honey,
how do
I'm
you...
taking our rag.
How do you, like, dingy a rag like that? It was authentic.
Yeah.
Dave Drummond peels out when Tommy wants him to get out of the car, and Shannon stops him with her truck and some stunt driving.
Tommy chases him on foot, as generally works when you're involved in a car chase. If one individual's on foot, it should be the pursuer.
And pulls
sure.
a gun, which I feel like that seemed a little intense
that
for the situation.
It was pretty aggressive, yeah.
Although Mr. Drummond seemed really unhinged for an innocent person.
And the acting director of the bank or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt bad for him. Matt comes back from an arcade with Callie and makes an offhand remark that it was fun and he would take Shannon someday. And she jumps in with a super awkward, "You mean like a date?" Like immediately. And they have a really awkward conversation.
It's like we've never got to see any of the lead up to this conversation, but they're like, "Oh, yeah, but I know you said you're not ready to date, and you said you're not ready to date, so, you know, no, not like a date." And then the precocious 14-year-old leaps in with a, "You guys don't know how to communicate."
Classic Hallmark trope.
Loved her, by the way.
Of the precocious, that's exactly what I wrote. The trope of the precocious child who is wiser than the adults and sees everything. And lays it all out for these bumbling adults who don't know how to.
And is like, "You guys better get together. It's the last movie."
The volunteer project is back on, but volunteers aren't showing up because they're upset about the murder. But also, who are these people who are just going to be available to work on this house all day, every day for three months? In addition to being upset about the crime scene vibe, they probably also just have jobs.
One of them was a plumber. We do know that.
Like, just, like, get a text and be like, "Oh, okay, I've just been sitting around twiddling my thumbs. I guess I'll go do major construction volunteer work."
I'll go sand the kitchen cabinets for 3 months. I can do that. I'm a housewife or whatever. I'm not. That'd be cool.
What they need to do is... call up that Murder House Flip show. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah.
I think I only watched one episode.
Wait, wasn't it on Tubi? Or
Roku.
No? Roku. And it was like a 6-minute show.
Oh, was it really short?
I feel
maybe
like
that's
really
why.
Short.
Yeah, I feel like there was something where like I watched one and then I.
And you kind of didn't know if it was like a scripted like satire at first of flipping shows. And then it turned out it wasn't. It was just like, that was just what they were doing.
Yeah. And I was looking at the episodes and they have some like pretty serious, like well-known murders like mm-hmm. Dorothea Puente and Golden State Killer. Like, yeah, I kind of want to go back and watch that. But that's what they need to fund this whole thing.
Yeah.
At this point. Shannon loses it on her dad because she has to solve this murder or they won't have enough volunteers to finish the house.
Has to.
By the way, for this scene where she's running a major construction project, she's wearing an almost white blue, like blousy off the shoulder peasant shirt.
Yep. That's what I wear when I clean or drill.
Mm-hmm. Shannon theorizes that Mr. Potter was trying to cause water damage to the house so that they wouldn't make their deadline, while Jim Hopkins lurks. And looks suspicious.
And then knocks over a broom.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, tries to slink away. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really suspicious for no reason other than just to be a red herring.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't, like, the very first scene, he's, like, totally normal. And then as soon as there's a murder, he's like, "Now I'm suspicious." But he's not. He didn't do anything.
And then at the very end, he's, like, back to normal. Like, "Hey, I'm a nice guy. I'm going to go check on the kids."
Yeah.
But, like, in between there, he's just like...
He kind of gives an explanation about how what we learn about him later. And I think it I think it kind of explains a little bit of that characterization, that he's just like knows that with his record, he'll just be looked at no matter what, which he ends up is like, you know, true. So I think, I mean, it's possible he could just be like very on edge because he's worried he'll take the fall because he's the ex-con and everyone else is like a rich homeowner. And he is not.
Yes. And what he saw that night was, yeah.
And who he saw that night. Mm-hmm. And he was very afraid to, like, as he pointed out, rightfully, like, tell the police what he knew.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That seems right. Callie finds out Jim left his son at the crime scene the night of the murder. Like, he got out of the car, he went into the house, and then, like, came back 5 minutes later. But Elliot makes Callie promise not to say anything. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He's like, promise me. And she's like, oh, okay. But, I mean, no woman keeps their promises in this series.
Turns out Mr. Potter was paying off an appraiser to appraise houses low so he could make a deal with a developer and get a kickback. But Dave Drummond got the board to approve this house donation before Mr. Potter could finalize the sale with the developer. So that's why he was so PO'd.
Right.
Patrice helps Mac and Shannon look through real estate records, where they quickly got trapped and then untrapped in a basement storage room.
Right.
I wasn't sure about that whole, like, because there was literally zero moment of tension where you're like, where it's like played out that they will be trapped and can't get out.
Yeah.
Immediately Shannon is like,
I'll get us out.
I'll get us out.
Yeah. Give me a hammer and a nail. But it gives them like the opportunity for this, what you think is going to be their mid-movie bonding.
But couldn't that have happened? Like, because they never actually looked at any of the files. Like, this door gets trapped, like, almost immediately.
Yeah, within seconds. Yeah.
And if it were me, I wouldn't have been that worried. I would have just been like, oh, okay, well, we were going to be down here looking at files anyways. Let's just keep doing that and see if somebody comes down. And
if not, then we'll hammer our way out of here. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was a bit of a dead end. But we do get some mid-movie
very one-sided bonding. Mid-movie bonding, where one character sort of comes clean and divulges their, you know, emotional baggage. And the other character's like, no, you're still a good person. And it's my turn to do. No, I'll keep it to myself. That was pretty embarrassing what you did. I don't know. I really didn't like that.
Yeah, it was a little rough, especially because, like, her side of it is not revelatory. Like, it's not like she's having, like, has a big shame secret or, like.
No, yeah.
It's really just, like, I guess that she hasn't processed.
Her mom's death.
Her mom's death. Yeah. And she needed to do that, like, graveside with her dad. And then she's good. But, like, she hadn't done that yet. So she wasn't ready for that conversation or something.
I don't know. It was very. It made me feel like she was not, well, like, once again, Mac is, like, carrying the emotional labor of this relationship, and that she's just like, hee-hee-hee, hoo-hoo-hoo. And her dad does call her out, like, every time we talk about, like, relationships or love, like, you make a joke and you just deflect it, and it's time for you to grow up because you're, like, in your mid-40s and there's a really great guy around. But I have a Hallmark question for you. And is the thing where, like, two people are getting married, but one of the characters never finalized their previous divorce, that's, like, a common, because that's what happened in Autumn Dreams. That's what happened to Mac, is that his former fiance never finalized the divorce. And then for some reason he waited until the wedding day and was like, actually, you know what? No. And then when I was searching for more cozy autumn movies, I found another movie where the divorce isn't finalized, like, in the description.
Usually it's like the hook for, like, why, because, like, the working girl in the city is, or the working guy in the city is always engaged to like the wrong, what I refer to as capital W wrong, capital G guy.
Yeah.
And like we know right away that he's the wrong guy because he like wants to work on Christmas or something like that.
Or redecorate the house.
And or like skip some tradition and not want to go home with her to her hometown because he has to work or anyways. So we know that's the wrong guy. And she secretly is still married to like her high school sweetheart or something like that. And so like it's a way for her to go back to her hometown and like realize that she still loves that person and she wants the slow life in her hometown and to move out there and that she needs to break up with the wrong guy. She was on the wrong direction.
So I just kind of wonder, then that means that Mac is someone's wrong guy, which could happen. You know, sometimes people just don't mix. But like if this is Hallmark universe, then his former fiance had this old flame that was the right guy.
Well, what's interesting is that this is like that premise is a way to absolve the protagonist in a Hallmark movie of any wrongdoing and cheating by like having this emotional affair or whatever with like this other person in their hometown while they're engaged to someone in the city.
Oh,
is really like a poor premise. Right. Like, but you need a way like to absolve the cheating. And so, it makes it okay. Is that it's made clear that the person in the city is the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes this cheating thing that we're thinking is cute in the small town or whatever is like totally fine. And everything's great and they're meant to be. And so it's fine that she's mm-hmm. cheating on this mm-hmm. person.
Okay. Yeah.
So what's interesting about that is that in this case, like Mac's fiance is villainized and it's like mm-hmm. she's the bad person in that situation because she didn't let him know
she had a problem with the truth.
Is that what he said?
I think he said something very similar.
She had a truth.
Truth problem.
Problem. Or so, yeah, something. Yeah. It was cute. So it's played. She's played as like a bad guy and he's mm-hmm. the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that is interesting because let's say that like maybe that fiance was Jill Wagner.
Yeah.
But in this movie, we think Jill Wagner's the bad one.
Huh. Yeah.
But in Autumn Dreams, all is well.
So really, we're just looking for lots of random ways to absolve people of the sin of cheating emotionally on their partner.
Or just like you need. Like, maybe it's to address that, like, many divorces or breakups are a result of just, like, people growing apart or not being right for each other or, like, growing and changing, which are very natural things. But, like, I feel like in those cases, it's usually they're not married yet. They're engaged. Yeah. And it's, like, it's okay to break up a boyfriend or a fiancé. They very rarely do, like, divorces.
Like a real, true.
Yeah. They are. I will say Hallmark is. It used to be that, like, there were no divorces in Hallmark world. Like, it was always somebody died. Like, the spouse died. That was the only acceptable way for this, like, single man with a child or whatever. I will say I've noticed in the last couple of years that Hallmark is introducing divorcees into the universe.
That's
which is
wonderful.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Not that we're fans of divorce. It's just that, like, there's not, divorce is not always, like, a failure or.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's just sign of, like, people who have just, like, grown in different directions and the other person's unwilling to hold space for that change or doesn't want the change. And
yeah, divorce is not a failure. Divorce is just a changing of the season.
Okay. I'm not sure how we got onto that, but
I don't know.
Okay. Oh, because Jewel,
the mid-movie bond. Where
yeah.
Jewel,
Mac
like, facepalmed
during the intimacy intermission, Jewel doesn't give it up.
Right. Jewel's like, I actually don't have intimacy in my heart. So
Dave Drummond comes to tell Shannon that he's been framed. And of course, she has to free him.
Oh, she has to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he does it in a very creepy way where he like jumps out at her from behind
a
pillar.
I mean, he's real unhinged.
He's like, hey, I have a wife, I have kids. You got to hear me, see? Believe me.
Mac hauls Jim into the police station to tell Tommy that he did go inside the house on the night of the murder and saw someone. But he knows what happens when you accuse someone related to the police.
Da-da-da.
So it seems like maybe they should have shared this information with Chief Jensen or literally anyone else.
Oh, that's such a great point. I didn't even think about that. They're like, there's only one person that we can share this information with, and it's the person most closely tied to the individual that we're sharing it about.
I mean, the whole police situation is confusing. Like, who do they go to or who does certain things? Like, it's like Tommy does everything. But yeah. Then sometimes, like...
But he's not a detective. He's always wearing a patrol uniform.
Yeah. There's clearly a lot of other staff and people on the force.
It's just the two of them, though.
The person Jim saw at the murder scene was Tommy's sister, Whitney.
The book owner lady.
We already saw Whitney acting very sus several times, but I don't think you focus on her because she's Tommy's sister, and of course she owns a bookstore, so...
Yeah, they never do anything wrong.
No. No. No, never.
No.
They're doing community service. Inexplicably, Tommy sends Shannon to check on Patrice, who didn't show up for work that day. She finds Whitney standing over an unconscious Patrice, and Whitney spazzes out a little bit and then bolts.
And is this where Shannon's going to pull back her leather jacket and reveal her deputy star? Because this is, how does she keep getting deputized?
It got really out of control in this one. Yeah, for sure. Especially, again, because, like, there are many people on this police force. It's not just Tommy.
No, it's, like, a nice station. Like, we always see tons of activity. But, like, Tommy's the only one that, like, takes reports or, like, goes to crime scenes.
And then has to, like, just send Shannon on.
It's, like, I don't have anyone else that could possibly do this. We're all overstaffed or understaffed, whatever version of that works.
Mm-hmm. We got COVID is swept through. Oh, this is pre-COVID.
Well, who knows?
Mac finds Whitney on her special reading bench, and apparently she's not the murderer, which I remembered this scene from when I saw this movie before, and I thought she was the murderer.
Yeah,
so this was my, like, say what moment for sure. She just wrote a threatening letter to saying that she was going to kill Potter, and like you do. That's what you do when you have a mortgage, right? You...
You write the bank president, I'm going to kill you. you better not give me late fees or I'm going to kill you. What? I mean, I've never been a homeowner, but I'll have to start taking notes from these movies.
Mm-hmm. So she was just worried about someone finding that letter, which is why she was just like spazzing out the whole time.
I wish we could have gotten a glimpse of the letter to
read
it.
Yeah, that would have been good.
There's like a quick shot, but I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I think I would have paused it if we were able to. We find out that even though they took Patrice to the hospital after she was attacked, she denied entry and just left as soon as they got there. And this is when I first started, like,
yeah,
actually, like, oh boy,
oh,
like,
Patrice.
This is happening.
Also, I loved that paramedic.
Oh,
girl.
My gosh.
She was so great. She was, like, so cute. Her hair was amazing. And she was such a good actor.
Well, and I love that they sort of, like, interrogate her. And then she has really good boundaries.
Yeah, she's like, excuse me, no. People leave against medical advice all the time. And I was like, yeah, they do. And that's fine. That's their right. I really liked it. I really liked her.
Now, you work with a lot of medical professionals. Like, are there some that have their hair that cute, like, on shift?
Oh, yeah. It's so weird.
Oh.
I never look good on shift. Maybe once or twice in the last 8 years. I don't know. But, no, yes, people do really get up at, like, I don't know. How long does that take?
Yeah, because your shift starts at like 6:30 or something.
Yeah, 6:45. And I don't know how you get up that early and like do your hair and your makeup, but people do it and they show up with like the cutest hair. And then.
But then doesn't it get like.
Dipped into fluids?
Yeah.
Yeah, it can. It sure can. That's a great observation that I have many times told a student to put their hair up right now. Or. Because it's really gross. We do a really gross things.
I mean, there's so many, like a variety of fluids.
Oh, any of them. Yeah, all and any that you could throw at our hair.
And sometimes they probably like splatter.
Yep,
and...
they do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you can't avoid it. And like it, if it goes over like your face shield and it like splatters into your hair, that's, you tried, you know.
Wow. Okay. They figure out that Patrice is looking for a safe deposit key that Potter hid in one of his books. She knew about his schemes, but also he foreclosed on her father's house and wouldn't help him. And then he died. Because of this shame. He died of shame. From losing his house.
Yeah, per Patrice, he died of shame. Per the medical
You want to see the
he might have died of
medical examiner's report?
Yeah, massive MI or something like that. It's much more likely for a man of his age than shame to be listed as a cause of death.
She tells Shannon all of this, but then escapes with like the old Scooby-Doo fallen bookcase trick.
And Shannon just stops. She's like, a fallen bookcase. And then she immediately leaps over it. She's like, go around back, Mac. I'll chase her.
Oh, because did we mention, like, Mac and Shannon, at this point now, Mac and Shannon contact Tommy about this, and they know where Patrice is headed. But for some reason, the police aren't taking over from here.
Yeah.
They're just like, all right, cool. You guys handle this.
Okay, guys. Citizen's arrest.
And then Shannon says really quickly, like, you can, like, barely catch it. She says, we'll be careful.
No, I didn't catch that.
Huh?
We'll be careful.
We'll be careful. And then they, like, head to the credit union. Patrice is trying to casually unlock a safety deposit box at a credit union with a huge gaping wound on her forehead.
That wound was so big. It was not approximated. I don't know how. She just got it. It's a scalp laceration. Like, it would be bleeding so much.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
gosh.
I did not understand.
Like,
without,
seeping?
And, like, ugh. Swollen and, like, red. And, like, there's no way that she got that wound, like, 2 hours prior and has been, like, running around and opening deposit boxes. Knocking over bookcases.
Oh, my God. She then tries to escape by climbing multiple flights of stairs, which, I mean, this is how I know I will ultimately die, because is chasing me and I will just have to stop running. Like, this is a...
This is how you get your chair stolen.
Yes. Side rail...
I totally forgot about
we
that.
Were at a rest area one time enjoying a nice picnic lunch, and we had to take some chairs out of the car to get to the food.
Some nice chairs.
Nice chairs. And I just wanted to leave them on the
side. You stacked them up next to the car and wanted to leave them while we like hiked into this rest area and ate our lunches.
And you were concerned that someone was going to steal them.
Yeah.
And I said, well...
Such derailment.
I just said, well, we'll be right there at the table. We can just run over here.
We can just run over there and stop
them. Like, what's that going to look like?
Hey, give us back our chairs. But instead of like... Slide tackle them.
Rest area bandits.
Just chair bandits. I don't know why I'm so paranoid. I also don't know why I like really insulted you so deeply.
And Sarah said, Kat, I know you're not going to run. You're not going to be able to run. to apprehend these chair bandits.
I'm sure I said it in such a much more insulting way. I don't remember the exact wording because I'm so ashamed of it, but it was like, I like very, very concisely like told Kat that I was going to have to chase after them because there was no way she was going to run after them. And so it was really my decision because I was going to have to be the one doing the pursuit. But then, like, you also agreed.
Oh, I would 100% agreed. So. Yes, because this occurs to me all the time that, oh, I can't, like, I'm just going to have to lay down and just take
run
it.
Down the flight of stairs. That's
yes.
So much
where
easier.
Is she going?
Why are you running up? It's stairs.
What's the
heart.
End game? She did just have I think she has a concussion, so.
Concussions make people do crazy things, including run up. Like six
it was so
stairs.
Many stairs
and it's like one of those square staircases that I've never been a part of, like I've never been in one of those staircases.
She's also wearing heels.
They kept like zooming in on her feet as she was running up the stairs, which makes me think that that's because there was like a stunt double actually doing it. But what was really hilarious was that one, these heels were so awful, they did not go with her jeans, and two, I was like, oh, they're setting it up because she's gonna like fall down the stairs and that's how Shannon's gonna apprehend her. But no, she just is like somehow a highly trained American ninjas warrior whatever. Mm-hmm. and
they're like it. They're like Scholl's brand.
Yeah, the heel block is like 4 inches thick. It's very I don't know, whatever.
So they end up up on the roof, having a nice classic roof standoff. And
this
Patrice is going to jump off.
So dramatic. I was very surprised that we resorted to this.
Well, because you think like the bookstore altercation is like going to be it. And then the police take over. But no, we got a whole new setting in the credit union.
Yeah. That
had really nice marketing in there.
And it's like 12 stories tall.
Mm-hmm. So Patrice is about to jump off the roof, and then she's saved by Max bear hug, which looked great.
It did look great, you know, and Shannon was like talking her down, and she's like, you don't have to do this, Patrice. And then she did that like Mac eye moment again, where like, you know, the last time with the dumbwaiter. But this time it was like, let's please save this woman from jumping off of a building because I can't do it. And Mac like tackles her, but like, did you notice that when he tackled her and took her to the ground, he like put his lips against her temple as he's like,
it was very tender.
It was like the most tender, like you've just like picked up your child that scraped their knee and you're like, quiet now, quiet child. And he, like, kind of, like, lip grazes her temple, and he, like, has his hand on her forehead and on her leg, and he's, like, just holding her as she sobs. But he doesn't know her.
No, he's just, like, he's like this with everyone.
He's just such a giving person.
Yeah. We end with Max book signing, and Callie and Elliot are buds. Jen and Sean are holding hands. So I thought this was like a week later because the book signing originally was scheduled for 2 weeks.
Yeah, the last
like at the
Friday.
End of mm-hmm. Callie's visit, but it had to have been rescheduled from the original date. Probably because Whitney, well, I guess would Whitney be charged with anything? Because they think that Patrice injured herself.
Oh, yeah, that she gouged her own forehead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe Whitney didn't do anything. But anyways, this was all traumatic and maybe she had to reschedule the book signing and Callie had to come back.
Oh, is that what you I kind of thought it was just the same.
It was there schedule. Was some reason that it had to be later. And I don't remember why, but there was something that where I was like, "Oh no, this has to be like oh, the house got finished." That's why. Because she says, oh, we were able to make our deadline.
Right. So like 3 months
later. It had to be 3 months later. Yeah. And Shannon is wearing a yellow dress that I don't know, I had mixed feelings about it.
I hated it.
Okay.
So much.
It seemed like it was it ill-fitting?
I think it was ill-fitting.
It was inappropriate. Like it didn't quite go with the vibe.
It was not her color. the weird, it was so bad. It was such a bad dress. The top didn't match the bottom. It was very odd.
And then I thought it was eyelet, which I guess is really in right now.
But like just on the bottom. And it was kind of like a tiered, but it was like stacked a, eyelet.
Almost like a lace.
Yeah. But then it kind of had that like corseted boning in the top. I don't know. It was really bad. It did not fit her. It was not her style. The sexy black dress was way better for her. And the cute little blue dress from the beginning. Mm,
very cute.
Yeah.
After three movies, we finally get one closed mouth kiss and a handhold. That is all we get.
Yeah.
Which I thought in the last movie there was going to be a big payoff because they were practically doing it in that restaurant.
I mean, the smoldering stairs in the restaurant. And then Mac, like, he, like, confesses to her that he's ready. He's so impatient. He really wants to be with her. And he is like, I am so into you, Shannon. You know, this isn't verbatim, but he's like, you have made me feel so ready to jump back into this world and be with somebody. And then he like pauses and it's like her turn to reciprocate. And instead of in an adult manner communicating anything to him, she just like gives him this kiss. And she's like, hee hee, kiss. Like that, I don't know, it was so juvenile. And Mac's like such an adult and he's like such a good communicator and he's like so emotionally intelligent. And Shannon is just like, hee hee. Hee hee hee, kiss. I'm not going to tell you how I feel about you still.
Yeah, or like sharing that conversation that she did have with her dad.
Yes.
At her mother's grave where she realized that she hadn't really processed this or she was holding back and not wanting to take a chance. And now she was and he was worth it. She decided that he was worth it.
Yes, and, like tell him, like give him that feedback too because like he's risking a lot. It's like feels very risky to tell somebody how you feel about them. And I just, once again, Shannon deflects basically and just kisses him. And it just, I mean, I know that like all we want is our like happily ever after moment, you know, where like now everything's going to be fine from here on out because they're together and they love each other. But it just felt like a real like kick in the pants of like, no, Mac is just going to continue to carry the whole burden of this relationship.
So then back to your previous question, do we think they're going to, are they going to live in the Craddock house?
That's exactly what I was wondering. I don't know. I mean, it like none of this, are they even going to have a conversation about it? Or is one of them going to decide, probably Shannon, what is going to happen but never tell Mac? And then Mac's just going to be like, wait, where are we moving to? And do you want to finish this renovation? And then we sell it? Or, I mean, I don't know. I think they should live in that house. It's very cool.
Well, I think in Hallmark world, there's like, it's all very chaste. So, like, they would live in, like, so now they're dating. He probably needs to move out of the playhouse.
Oh, right.
And live in the Craddock house.
Right.
She's gonna finish the renovation. He's gonna live there for a while, for like several years while they date.
Several years.
Then they'll get married.
They'll get engaged.
They'll get engaged.
For several more years. While he continues to sleep on the couch when she's in imminent danger.
And even though she clearly has a guest room.
And they're like now 65 years old, but still look the same.
And then they'll have a great wedding.
With another closed mouth kiss. Their second. Mm-hmm. Ever.
Okay. Personal cats out of personal bags. What in the movie hit home for you?
Yeah. So I. Oh.
Do you want me to go first?
Nope. I got it. So at the gravesite when Shannon was talking to her dad, and this was kind of like I just was very struck by like the fact that I feel like I don't know what parental conversations are supposed to be like. I don't understand how parents are supposed to interact with their kids. I have never had such an interaction with a parental figure, and I was kind of hit over the head with that in this movie for some reason, where I was like, wow, her dad, like, really knows her. Clearly, he's been, like, watching her and, like, cares about her and he wants what's best for her. And he's finally going to tell her, like, you've been doing this and, you know, I've let you go your own way, but I really want the best for you and you really need to stop deflecting. And that shows a lot of emotional maturity also on his part to even be able to recognize that that's happening. And I just was so struck by this, like, what? Is that how parents talk to their kids? Like, I don't know.
I also observed that scene and I was thinking I could feel the sense that maybe that parents must feel, or some parents do, of like, wow, having some intimate time with my wife, all these cells kind of came together or whatever, and now are like this like full adult person who like has her own life and is accomplishing all these things, that like how that must feel as a parent. Like, that's kind of what I was thinking about during that scene. And I mean, literally every thing sets me off these days with any kind of like parent that's like seems to really love their child and value them as a person, and that's stings all the time it happens. That was also mine as well, except mine was that, you know, so the chat that they're having by the grave is how Shannon was very open-hearted before her mom died, and then after her mom died she just kind of closed up. And it made me think about how open-hearted I was when I was younger and how closed off I have been now that life has kind of slapped me around a bit. And I was listening to a podcast recently that talked about like that, like returning to like that younger self, that like you have everything that you had then. Now it's just like you're letting like fear and shame and all these other things of people, what other people are thinking or what expectations or whatever, are clouding all of that, and to just sort of like get back to like where you were to begin with before all that stuff kind of started to erode your sense of self or your ability to open up or so that was mine. That scene was mine as well. So I think that was really well done.
It was really well done. It was really well written, and I do like that, like, her mom was kind of included as like a third character in the scene, like with her headstone. And then also, you know, he talked about like talking to her, but it was just like, I thought it was a really well done scene. And it was actually the source of another one of my later, whatever we'll talk about after this.
Yeah. Good job, Tina. Also, I think that dad is good. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of the older actors, there's always older actors in these films, which is good, tend to be like sort of like wise, you know, kind of, I've got it all figured out, which I don't know if it's totally realistic of older people. I don't know that everybody gets to that place, but like they're there to be like the supportive, wise person who's like cheering on the younger leads of the movie.
Yeah.
But I think he does do a good job of that. Who were you attracted to?
Mac. I mean, just once again, I just feel like I think I'm like highly attracted to his emotional maturity. And then, like, his ability to sort of, I mean, I know he's an author, but his ability to like sum up the situation, like whenever they first go home and Jewel is playing her guitar while the child sleeps, and they're talking about the murder, and Mac is like, you know, I, as a crime reporter, I never could figure out why murder happens so often. And maybe that's why I write about it, to try to find that answer. But it just, yeah, I don't know. Just, like, sometimes the way he says stuff, I'm like, ugh, you're just, like, such a complete person. Really, yeah, Mac, for sure.
Okay. I actually kind of had the hots for Dave Drummond, the bank vice president.
Actually, I knew that was going to be yours. I just...
Actually, Elliot the kid had hair exactly like my ex-husband's.
I know. What the F was that about?
It was like a little like baby ex-husband.
Yeah. No, it was very shocking and weird to witness. Whatever. I don't know why that haircut proliferated for your ex-husband so late into his life, but
it's just his natural hair. Like, that's just the way it grows. It was a pretty amazing head of hair, I have to say. But no, I guess I'm attracted to older men who are really unhinged.
Oh God, Anthony LaPaglia, as we previously pre-podcast discussions. Empire Records, Anthony LaPaglia, not whatever else he's in, Criminal Minds or something.
He was in that show was called Miss No, Without a Trace.
Yeah.
I also loved him in that.
I mean, he's great, but there's just something about Joe, the record store owner. That
absolutely. And definitely not Anthony LaPaglia in The Client, where he was wearing a mesh tank top.
Yeah.
If you remember seeing that movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe I need to rewatch that one. Because, of course, that's another one where, like, at the time, we're focused on Brad Renfro.
Right.
But now, at this stage in our lives, maybe we're like... Anthony LaPaglia.
Or Tony, as he might be known to some.
Wasn't he the snake in that? I think really he was known as the snake
in The Client. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jake the snake. No, I don't remember his first name.
Okay, fanfic for side characters?
I had two ideas for fanfic, and they both involved like buddy comedies.
Okay.
One was like, I want to dive into these paramedics and their life.
Yes.
And I want to see what kind of calls they go on in Lighthouse Cove with all of these like murders that paramedics are never called to. I just kind of want to know. I feel like they would kind of be these behind the scenes observers, and they might be like, why is this Shannon woman like, why is she on every dead body that we get called to? Like, what is going on? Why is she constantly here? And then I also wanted to see the two kids, like, have a little summer, like, friendship around the cove and, like, explore and, like, do crazy things.
Okay. I went for apartment building hijinks once the tenants move in.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be good?
Like a big ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm.
That would be so fun.
Yeah. There were, like, how many units were there supposed to be?
They never said. Seven, maybe? Yeah. They said it was a seven bedroom. But, like. Surely you need more than one bedroom in your apartment with you and your dad.
You know who I don't want to see is that appraiser who's doing like 4 to 5 appraisals a day. Yikes.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like...
So boring.
That's not a life.
No, but that was actually a scene that I forgot about, but that Mac was very...
Oh, he was like...
So good in.
So aggressive in that.
Yeah, it was awesome.
He was going after that appraiser.
Kind of a different side of him. Where you can tell he, like, plays it different with different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he was being a little inappropriate, but then it turns out the guy was corrupt, so.
Right. Because, like, remember when he was going after Cliff in the last movie?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Cliff, share beer, you ladies' man. And now he's like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to trip you off that ladder if you don't tell me what's going on.
I mean, clearly he could sniff it out because I could not. Invasion of the Hallmark Body Snatchers. I think Whitney was the killer in some other movie. Was she in A Crossroad? I literally, like, they all run together.
Oh.
I think she's been in several.
Yeah.
But,
she's very tall, which I think gives her, like, killer height advantage.
And then Mac's niece Callie is played by the actress who plays the daughter in the Darrow and Darrow mysteries, which we might cover. There's only, like, two or three or something. She plays exactly the same kind of character.
Love it.
Steam level. I only said three.
I said four, but...
Because I feel like Mac was flirty with everyone, so he just sizzles with everyone, which takes away from, like...
Their chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the kiss was pretty bad.
That was pretty bad.
After you, like, sent me those other Hallmark movies to watch, there have been, like, so many different types of kisses now.
Wasn't the one in Falling for Vermont was like kind of hot.
Yeah. It was a really good
one. I think
one.
There was tongue.
Yeah. I feel like there's like a little spit string. Yeah.
Yeah. Hallmark IRL moments?
Well, so, okay. So this one kind of like goes back to that cemetery scene where the dad says something to Jewel and he's like, it's not a, love isn't about luck. Love isn't about yes. getting lucky. Love is about opening your heart.
That was great.
And like being open to like receiving it. And so I guess like it's not really a specific moment necessarily for me, but that phrase made me feel like, you know, that's what I've been working towards for like years is like, you know, being open to it. Because like I think so often we're sold this like it is a luck thing. Like you do just trip into like a relationship. And I feel like I've tripped into like too many relationships in the past. And finally I'm in a relationship where it was very intentional. It was not like a, oops, we like each other. Like, let's just like slide into a relationship. It was like, no, you know, we're going to like try. We're going to be very intentional with this. It's not about like, yes, we like each other, but, and that is lucky, but it's not going to work off of that. It's going to work off of like, if we're both open to it, if we both like trust and move forward and like, and trust that the other one's going to also work at it. And so that kind of, that like whole phrase just really like resonated for me like over the last over a year now of this relationship of just feeling like I've made this choice and I feel like I have to work to be open, but it is work and that's like work that you still want to do.
Yeah, I think we're sold the idea that you just got to find the right person and then you can just check out and coast for the rest of your life.
Yep.
Like there's no like, no, then you got to, like, keep it going.
No, like, now it begins. Yeah, like, the work begins.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I, to take a little transportation turn, took a historic train ride a couple of weeks ago, and it was a full day on this steam engine through the mountains. It's the Cumbres and Toltec train in out of Chama and Chama, New Mexico and Antonito, Colorado. Highly recommend it. Check it out. It's amazing. You can also do a half day. And there's a little like depot where you stop halfway and eat the like the most delicious lunch you've ever had. And it was so delightful. And like because we were there on the full day, like you see it's like the same people all day. So like there's like different characters and like different couples and like we're like kind of getting to know them and like what they're speculating about their story. And it felt very Hallmark. Like, I feel like that would definitely be
yeah.
a Hallmark movie, except maybe there'd be a murder.
Yeah.
And then I could see all the different like couples or groups or whatever, like giving their, like where they were. And like, yeah. then there'd be some intrigue. And well, I saw this person coming out of the dining car.
And there'd be and, like a fake couple.
And like somebody, you know, would, who he ate this pumpkin pie at the lunch and then got sick and died or like did yeah. somebody see, you know. So I highly recommend it. It was really fun.
It sounds great.
Okay, well, we actually like knocked this out. I think probably the closest release date we'll have.
Yeah, pretty
That's
cool.
pretty amazing. Yeah. So we're off to a good start. We are being intentional about our falling.
Yes, we are.
This season, yes. we are going to fall the heck out of the next couple of months
yep.
to find joy.
Yes, and connect with our inner children.
Mm-hmm. So we will see you next time. We need to decide what we're covering next. That's
yeah,
exciting.
I can't wait. Maybe we'll make a little, like, tiny announcement.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for listening to Hallmarked for...
Murder.
The one on the left.